Now, the next reading from today from the Gospel is quite a long one, so I have invited one or two people, it's actually almost a cast of thousands, to come and participate in this reading today. So, we need some neighbours for the reading. Oh, and we need a narrator to help keep us on the track. We need some parents. And we need Jesus and the disciples, that's probably good. And we need some Pharisees. I think I'll be a Pharisee. And I see a fellow Pharisee coming down here. And of course, we need the man born blind. So Jesse's going to do that. Come down here, Jesse. There we go. Okay, let me find my word. Okay, narrator.
As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. One of his disciples asked him,
"Teacher, why was this man born blind? Was it because he or his parents had sinned?"
"No, it wasn't. But because of his blindness, you will see God work a miracle for him. As long as it is day, we must do what the one who sent me wants us to do. When night comes, no one can work. I am the light of the world."
Then Jesus spat on the ground, made some mud, and smeared it on the man's eyes.
"Go, wash in the pool of Siloam."
The man went and washed in Siloam, which means one who is sent. When he had washed off the mud, he could see. The man's neighbours and people who had seen him begging wondered if he really could be the same man.
"Isn't this the man who used to sit and beg?"
"Yes, it is me."
"Is it him, or is it someone like him?"
"It is me. I am the man."
"Then how were your eyes opened?"
"Someone named Jesus made some mud and smeared on my eyes. He told me to go and wash it off in the Siloam pool. When I did, I could see."
"Where is he now?"
"I don't know."
The day when Jesus made the mud and healed the man was a Sabbath, so the people took the man to the Pharisees.
"How did you receive your sight?"
"Jesus made some mud and smeared it on my eyes. Then, after I washed it off, I could see."
"This man is not from God. If he was, he wouldn't break the law of the Sabbath."
"How can a man who is a sinner perform such a miracle?"
Since the Pharisees couldn't agree among themselves, they asked the man,
"Well, what do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened."
"He is a prophet."
The Jewish leaders wouldn't believe that the man had once been blind. They sent for his parents.
"Is this your son who you say was born blind?
How can he now see?"
"We know he's our son and that he was born blind.
But we don't know how he got his sight or who gave it to him. Ask him. He's old enough to speak for himself."
His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. The leaders had already agreed that no one was to have anything to do with anyone who said that Jesus was the Messiah. So for the second time, they called a man who had been born blind.
"Swear by God to tell the truth. We know that Jesus is a sinner."
"I do not know if he's a sinner or not. All I know is that I used to be blind, but now I can see."
"What did he do to you? How did he heal your eyes?"
"I have already told you once, and you would not listen. What do you want me to tell you again? Do you also want to become his disciples?"
"You are his disciple? But we are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses."
"But as for this man Jesus, we don't even know where he comes from."
"How strange. He healed my eyes, and yet you don't know where he comes from? We know that God listens only to people who love and obey him. God doesn't listen to sinners, and this is the first time in history that anyone has ever given sight to someone born blind. Jesus couldn't do anything unless he came from God."
"You've been a sinner since the day you were born. Do you think you can teach us anything?"
And they drove him out. When Jesus heard what had happened, he went and found the man.
Do you believe in the Son of Man?
Sir, if you tell me who he is, I will put my faith in him.
You've already seen him. He is talking with you now.
Lord, I put my faith in you.
And he worshipped him.
I came to judge the people of this world. I'm here to give sight to the blind and to make blind anyone who can see.
Some of the Pharisees heard Jesus say this.
Surely we are not blind, are we?
If you were blind, you would be guilty. But now that you claim to see, you will keep on being guilty.
In this is the word of the Lord.
Thanks
be to God.
Our Old Testament reading today is taken from 1 Samuel chapter 16 verses 1 to 13. David is anointed as king. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul? I have rejected him from being king over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and set out. I will send you to Jesse, the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons." Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears of it, he will kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one whom I name to you." Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him trembling and said, "Do you come peaceably?" He said, "Peaceably I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they came, he looked on Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is now before the Lord." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. He said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one." Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one." Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said to Jesse, "Are all of your sons here?" And he said, "There remains yet the youngest, but he is keeping the sheep." And Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here." He sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. The Lord said, "Rise and anoint him, for this is the one." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward. Samuel then set out and went to Ramah. And this is the word of the Lord.
I was 11. Summer had somewhat decided reluctantly to give way to autumn not long before winter was due to arrive. We had moved house some 6 months before. It wasn't a good time for me. I'd just finished grade 7, so moving house to another part of town meant I hadn't had a chance to make friends locally. But my younger sister had started at a new primary school, and she had made new friends and was playing with one on a swing in our backyard. I watched them for a while. I was, of course, far too dignified to be playing with those 8-year-olds. They were swinging as high as they could. And at the end of the swing, they jumped off, seeing how far they could fly through the air, giggling and squealing as they did so. Even then, I was not a physically adventurous person, but it did look like fun. So when they tired of it and went somewhere else, I tried it myself, swinging up high, swinging, getting the timing right, jumping, and oh, something was not right with my ankle. There's a reason I'm not a physically adventurous person. I went in to my grandmother, went into Gran, and she knew just what to do. A nice cup of tea, with plenty of sugar, of course. And it did help. It did bring me some comfort. But by the time my mum came home, it was apparent that a cup of tea really wasn't solving the problem, and I was obviously still distressed. And my mum knew what to do. She brought out the big guns in the comfort line. She ran me a bath, a nice warm bath. And that did help too. But ultimately, nothing brought comfort until a week later, during which, I might tell you, I walked to and from school on a broken ankle. Nothing helped until the x-ray was reread, a broken ankle diagnosed, and a plaster cast put on the injured limb. Finally, it stopped hurting. A nice cup of tea, a nice warm bath, they are symbols of comfort for me. What about you? What are symbols of comfort for you? A hot water bottle or a nice warm wheat bag. A nice big chair. Comfy chair, you can put your feet up. Oh yes, sounds good. Oh yes, nice warm bed. Get all warm and snug. The sound of rain on the roof, reminding you how secure you are inside, yes. Pardon? A warm dressing gown, yes. So even before you get into bed, you can snuggle after that nice warm bath. And going into your nice warm bed, you can snuggle up and having your cup of tea. Pardon? They're teddy bears, yes. Something to cuddle up to. An electric blanket. A big block of chocolate. You've got a live teddy bear. Well, we won't go into that again. Ruth, what did you say, sir? Somebody did, yes. It's just sort of one of those guilty pleasures. We sort of think chocolate shouldn't be a comfort, but it is. It is. When my children were small and I used to go and visit my mum the other side of town when Kim was on late shift and we'd be driving home through town late at night, I would sing to my children. And one of the songs I used to sing was The Lord's My Shepherd, which I still know by heart. It was a song of comfort for me. I'm not too sure what it was for my children as we drove through the night and they were locked in the car with me, but it did keep them quiet and keep them from arguing with me on the other. We sang that song a little while ago. That song, that psalm that's brought comfort to people of faith for thousands of years. It speaks to us of a reality in which we can say with confidence, I have every good thing I need. Every good thing I need. We may not be so familiar with shepherds nowadays, but the vivid images of the psalm give us an idea. Someone who leads and feeds and cares for the vulnerable. With tenderness, gentleness, and attentiveness. And while we may think of a shepherd as male,
caring for sheep could be the work of women too. Can't you hear in the Psalms echoes of motherly qualities? Who feeds you? Who makes sure you get enough rest? Who turns situations of fear into situations of joy? This caring shepherd does not just herd or lead tenderly, but does everything that must be done so that trusting sheep may live, leading them by still waters for rest, on green pastures to be fed, in paths of righteousness, so they know where they're going. The psalm begins by talking about the shepherd, about God, but moves in the middle to talking to God. Did you notice that as you sang that song? In the middle verse, suddenly we're no longer talking about God. The Lord was my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. In death's dark vale, I fear no ill. Now that's the other hymn, isn't it? I'm getting my hymns mixed up. That was the other. I used to sing The King of Love, My Shepherd Is to my kids too. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Not God is with me, you are with me. Suddenly that psalm changes from talking about things to expressing that deep relationship with God. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The psalm goes on to use the image of a feast to convey God's goodness and power. God's goodness and power that cuts across anything that might threaten us or lead us to fear that we can be separated from the source of all life. Feasts at which we are welcomed and valued guests speak to us of well-being, of life in its fullness. And the welcoming table is at the heart of our life together. A celebration and remembrance that even when Jesus walked through the darkest valley, he was not alone, and neither are we. But there's nothing magical in the words of the psalm themselves. The psalm is a source of comfort because those words remind us of our real source of comfort in the difficulties of life, and that source of comfort is being in relationship with the source of all life, all being, that source that we call God. Here's another version of the psalm. God is my calm centre in the storm. God covers me when all is ripped away. God alone knows the horror I've seen. Even though death assails me from every side, God holds me close. Surely everything around me has changed, and I will depend upon God every hour. The words of the psalm are powerful as they remind us of our real source of comfort. And that connected with that source of comfort is God's imperative for life, for justice and compassion. We sing, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, like they might trip along behind us like little pets. But the word's much stronger than that. It's almost, shall goodness and mercy will pursue me all the days of my life. Goodness and mercy will insist on being part of my life all the days of my life. Not only for me, but for all those I meet. And of course, the word comfort comes from a Latin word that means to strengthen greatly. As we find comfort, we are strengthened to bear that comfort to others. Not everything that brings us comfort, though, helps us draw closer to God. I don't think chocolate quite does it, no. I'm not even sure that a nice cup of tea does it. The people of Israel sought to strengthen their lives by having a king appointed to lead them. As the story of the first king, Saul, and then David unfolds, it's clear in the biblical witness that this is not seen as an unambiguously good thing. There are two parties. Those for the appointing of a king assert that the king will be an agent that will lead people closer to God. And ideally, that is what a king does. But there is an opposing viewpoint that fears that having a king will only lead Israel to trust more in human strength and wisdom. And ultimately, that will lead them away from God. We catch hints of this argument in the story of the anointing of David. We're told that God doesn't see as human beings see. To God, it's not the obvious outward appearance that matters, but the inward connection with God. But somehow sneaking into that is the viewpoint of those that think that it does matter what human beings look like, because we are told that their next king, David, is in fact a good looker. The way the king acted could be a source of comfort and strengthening to the people and draw them closer to God. But if they relied on the king as their source of comfort, they weren't going to get very far. And indeed, when they did rely on their king rather than on God, that is when things began to come apart. And there are times when the things we use to comfort us are harmful. They get in the way of us drawing close to God, of living out life fully, or of others being able to live theirs. Alcohol and illicit drugs and gambling are obvious ways that we see people do this. Many people who use alcohol inappropriately or use illicit drugs do so as a form of self-medication because they cannot bear their lives. They seek comfort not in dealing with their lives, but in trying to forget it. But even more socially acceptable substances can at least prevent us from feeling our discomfort and facing what that discomfort is really about and hearing how God would lead us out of it. That nice cup of tea, that, oh, lovely cup of coffee in the morning, and my can of Pepsi, food, excitement. They can be ways that we prevent ourselves from thinking about what is wrong with our lives and what is wrong with the world, and we're taking steps to deal with it. It's not only those physical things, it can be our attitudes to the world. When faced with the discomfort of seeing the reality of the man born blind, the disciples don't think, how can we help this man? They don't think, how can this man become part of our community? Instead, they find comfort in blaming him or his parents for his predicament. If you find someone to blame about something, then perhaps you really don't have to deal with it. But Jesus tells them this is not the way that God acts in the world. God acts in ways that bring wholeness, in ways that are life-affirming, not in ways that damage. The Pharisees who spent a lifetime in finding comfort in their religious sentiments and holy clichés cannot see God at work among them. Jesus, however, turns the situation around by entering into the predicament and bringing healing. And it's there in the discomfort of life, the reality of life, that Jesus mixes living water into the dirt and helps us to see. During Lent, we've been asked to look at how we deal with our discomfort, how we seek comfort. It's one of the reasons that people take on the discipline of giving up something for Lent. It's a chance to go without one of those sources of comfort. For me, as I said, that's my can of Pepsi Max, actually my two cans of Pepsi Max that I usually have in the day. When I go home tired and out of sorts and drink that can, it makes me feel different. Going without it makes me actually think more about what is disturbing me or what has made me feel like I need that can and actually face dealing with it. Going without things helps us to ask the questions, what does it feel like we are missing out on? How does it change how we look at the world? What do we find ourselves doing instead? Do we find ourselves turning to God as that source of comfort more easily than we have been doing? In our discussion groups, we've been talking about facing the reality of world poverty, facing it not to be overwhelmed or dismayed by it, but accepting that we have a part to play in healing our world. And in worship, we come together to be greatly strengthened by discovering together the reality in which we live, a divine power we call God, who is on the side of life and its fulfilment. And it's from that reality we look at the world and ask, what is our part? How are we bearers of goodness and mercy in this world? When we have to walk through the dark valleys, when we long for green pastures and still waters for us or for others, we can know that God is with us, offering us more than a nice cup of tea, but calling us to the feast of life, strengthening us to walk in goodness and mercy all the days of our life.